Carol John Grande with Words to Go. Welcome to our podcast of Words to Go, a showcase for great writing and the spoken word. Today we're featuring two return visits from writers. First off, an essay on late summer angst by the irrepressible Steve Pitt, followed by a story from Sarah Cassidy about young love and its many dimensions. So, no book reviews this week? No opinionated comments? Well, if you are listening carefully to our intro, you probably noticed that I didn't mention great reads on Words to Go. So what's happened to the book reviews? Well, it's not as if I've run out of books to talk about, only I've begun to realize that a fair and thoughtful book review works better on the printed page than it does as a spoken on-air essay. So if you want to know what I'm reading these days, you can Google The Thoughtful Blogger and you'll find my book reviews. As for commentary and opinion, there's some of that on my blog too, and there may be more to come on Words to Go. But for the time being, at least, this podcast is devoted to reading the work of up-and-coming writers. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. I'm going to start off on a lighter note with an essay by Steve Pitt from the collection Prose to Go. In August Anxiety, Steve's found an ingenious and very funny way to talk about a father-son relationship. Steve Pitt's been a freelance writer for over 3 decades. He's authored 7 books and hundreds of magazine and newspaper articles. Bet you don't know any recipes for gourmet groundhogs? Well, Steve does. He won a Periodical Distributors Authors Award in 1980 for his Harrowsmith article detailing his cooking prowess. But I digress. Here's his essay, August Anxiety. "Hey, old man, can I have the computer for a bit?" asks my 17-year-old son, Kevin. More of a demand, really, but that's all right. For only one more day, we will be a one-computer family, and then someone from a company called the Geek Chorus will be coming over to install something called a wireless router, and my wife, my son, and I will never have to share a computer again. Instead, we will all split off to our separate workstations in different rooms of the house and do our own things. Hopefully, we will still come together for holiday meals at least twice a year. Pitt the Younger's timing is actually perfect. I've been up since 5 a.m. trying to make a writing deadline. I'm into the home stretch, but I'm burned. I need my power nap. I stand up and we do the computer station shuffle, each of us trying to maneuver around the other in this cramped basement corner. God, he's huge, I think, for the illionth time. Now 6'3", a sinewy 190 pounds against my 5'8", and let's not go there, mass. I stretch out on the couch on the far side of the room and fall asleep to the tick-tick back of my son's fingers mosh-pitting on computer keys, his head bobbing to the muted strains of Cannibal Corpse escaping from his headphones as he checks in with his friends around the world. I drift away, and a familiar sense of panic takes over. I'm having another anxiety dream. It's August. When I was an armored truck guard, I used to get anxiety dreams about being shot at. But when I reached for my holster, I'd find my .38 Special replaced by a banana. No Freudian analysis, please. When I was studying to be a minister, I used to get dreams where I was about to preach a sermon to a packed church, and I'd open my Bible only to find my underlined Ecclesiastes quotes gone. Every year since I became a stay-at-home dad, I've had recurring dreams where I'm trying to get my toddler-age son to school, only my car won't start, the neighbors won't stop, and the buses all veer off in the wrong direction. When finally we do make it to the school, we find that the doors are all locked, and as we stand outside, I can actually hear the principal's voice saying on the school intercom, "You must be some kind of lousy parent if you can't even get your kid here on time for the first day of school." It doesn't matter what age my son is in real time. In my dreams, he is always a toddler. Unpleasant hits of reality sometimes intrude. I'm always an older and fatter version of me, but my son is still just a tyke, dressed in fresh-pressed, matching first day of school Speedy Gonzales shorts and t-shirt. Again, the car doesn't start. The neighbors pass us by as we wave frantically from the sidewalk. We catch a bus only to have it inexplicably turn around and head in the opposite direction it is supposed to go. The anxiety nightmare seems to go on for hours. We change buses, we try cabs, we run up and down streets that are simultaneously familiar and bizarrely foreign. I keep promising my son that we're almost there, only to be proven a liar over and over again. Each time, my son just looks up at me, nods, and smiles with implicit trust, despite my incessant incompetence. Then, by divine miracle, we are in the schoolyard. But this time, kids and parents are still calmly standing out front. We've made it! I suddenly realized two things. One, this time I knew the school door was going to open. Two, I realized that this was just another dream, and I am about to wake up on the basement couch, probably face to face with the arse end of the family pooch, who likes to sneak up and reverse spoon beside me when I'm sleeping. In other dreams, when I realize that I'm only dreaming, I know I have a few seconds to do any crazy thing I feel like. I can step off rooftops and fly. I can win shootouts with a 38 special banana or moon a church full of the faithful and still make a killing on the collection plate. The school bell rings. Kevin is about to walk toward those open doors, but before he can, I snatch him up in a bear hug, close my eyes, and hang on, trying to hold back the tears. As much as I adore my grown-up son, I desperately miss my smiling child who would follow his fallible old man anywhere. For one glorious dream moment, I have my little boy back, until I hear my adult son's voice tell me, "Hey, old man, you're scaring the dog." You've been listening to August Anxiety by Steve Pitt, included in the collection Prose to Go, Tales from a Private List, edited by Irene Davis, Fred Desjardins, and Barbara Florio Graham, and published in 2011 by Bridgecross Communications in Dundas, Ontario, Canada. Our next work is by Sarah Cassidy, whose story Carving the Air was broadcast a few months back on Words to Go. She is the author of Windfall and Slick, both published by Orca Books. Her poetry, fiction, and journalism have appeared in many periodicals. She lives in Victoria, British Columbia. I'm going to read a story called Verticals. It's about endings and beginnings, the opening of first love in a young woman as she puts her memory of a beloved horse to rest. It's full of the inventive language of memory. I hope you'll enjoy it. 2:06 a.m. I have forgotten how to sleep. The clock is silent, deviously so. It doesn't hum thickly as mine does at home, woolly, soothing. The headboard of Evan's antique bedstead ticks strangely, repeated clicks like light, very light, machine gun fire. The echo of a once-upon woodpecker, or of the parent tree itself nibbling carbon dioxide. The bedstead is American Craftsman, simple, elegant, modestly solid. I sized up its beauty last night, it being the frame of the site of my first, our first weevils? Termites? I bury my ear in the pillow to muffle the sound. I am on my side. Evan, asleep on his back, both of us naked, in our birthday suits. My left arm, slung over the barrel of Evan's chest, rises and falls as he breathes. His hip presses into the bowl of my own hips. The length of my leg shadows the length of his. There is no bumper, no buffering of air between us. We are as close as slick layers of kelp on the beach, as double yolks in a single shell. As organs. Mom's